So this is the time in the service when we usually turn to scripture and think together about what the scripture means and what it means in our community. And today we're actually working through a series on prayer called Living Connection, which is around actually practices of prayer. So we're thinking of it as a practice series where we're thinking about different ways of praying and introducing different parts of the Christian tradition that maybe we do less of in our community and inviting ourselves to experiment. Today, Darren DeMello is here with me, and we're gonna talk about lament together. But before I do that, I just wanna let Darren introduce himself. And he comes from Estuary Church, and so he also wanted to speak to our church on behalf of Estuary Church. So I'll turn it over to him first, and then we'll start talking about lament together.
Hi, everyone. Good to be with you. As Aaron said, I come from Estuary Church, which is just south of the river, where the river comes into the sea. Sorry, I'm kind of figuring out how to be in this space here. And I send greetings and first a little bit of thank you. So we've been part of the same ecosystem, myself and Artisan Church, for a number of years. I first heard about Artisan Church when I lived in Ontario. A friend called me up asking if I could put up a couple of members of a touring band for a night or two, which we did. Two musicians with Jordan Clausen slept on our couches, and we heard about a forming church in Vancouver with a love for artists. Fast forward to just a couple years ago, the Mennonite Brethren Church I was pastoring in was going through a significant conflict. A number of artisan folks gave counsel, inspiration, hope to many of us from that church. We're pretty beat up. Maybe you can relate. Like, as I get older, I keep hearing about all these stories about how my parents were really nice and kind to people, but but I just didn't know because I was younger, and they did it without any fanfare. And so I'm not sure how well known it is for you here or not, because they did it quietly, but some artisan folks provided a real lifeline. Some emotional support, listening ears, lots of document sharing, go-to people to sort through a mess. So part of me joining you here today is to offer an in-person thank you. Sincerely, know that you're always welcome to visit us anytime. I particularly enjoy our Wild Church gatherings, so please come and join one of those. And of course, if you need a rest for the night, my couch is still available. Here is a thank you card from our community, and I'd like to read this note as well from our guidance circle, which is kind of like our board, our finance circle, and our co-pastorate. Dear Artisan Church, on behalf of the Estuary Church leadership and church body, we would like to extend our sincere thanks for all the support Artisan have provided to us during the formation of New Church. We are grateful for the tangible support of donation receipts, bookkeeping services, and payroll services, as well as the encouragement and prayer support that your leadership team provided to us during a critical time of formation. Now that we have our BC Society and CRA charity status, Estuary Church can manage our own administrative functions. Your generosity and willingness to come alongside our fledgling group made the journey seem much less daunting. May God bless Artisan Church. Sincerely, Estuary Guidance Circle and co-pastors, myself and Lead COSA. Thanks.
So it makes sense in some ways at the level of a shared story between our churches, and that being in many ways a story of shared grief, things that have been difficult, that we're talking about lament together and to bring you here. But I'll just explain maybe why I thought when Darren and Lee wrote and said, could we do some preaching exchange? I thought, oh, lament would be a good one to invite Darren to come and speak on. And it's because since October, mid-October, late October, Estuary Church has invited and held a space of weekly vigil and lament a vigil for peace in Israel and Palestine on Thursday nights on Zoom. And so because he's been kind of holding that space, and the one time when I came and led that, I read through and thought, this is a beautiful liturgy of lament. Like, it was very deep and it felt very meaningful. And so I thought, let's have a conversation about this. What is lament? How do we lament? Well, why aren't we doing much of it? And what happens when we do lament? So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'll just start by asking that question. Like, how do you describe lament? Like, how would you define it or describe it from your experience of it?
My understanding of lament is largely grieving with the divine. So grieving with the divine. It's a broad category for cries of suffering, groans of longing, desires for change. Of course, lament can be liturgical in church spaces, maybe like this, but beyond that, lament is sobbing. Lament's an expression of anger, disappointment, betrayal. And of course, that means lament is vulnerable. Could be towards God, could be towards each other, towards ourselves. As we know, sometimes it could be hard to open up those hard places within ourselves. And there's really no prerequisite to lament. If we're drawn to prayer in this series, perhaps as being openness to God anytime, anywhere, lament is that as well, with a particular emphasis on engaging with suffering. Lament is found in the hardest places, bedside, graveside, prison, alone, while high, with others, war zones, and hunger. Of course, it is a genre within the Hebrew scriptures, which we will speak about in a little bit, but I also just want to kind of validate and open up with this wide view of lament, that there is no rubric. It's kind of just like a roller coaster, like grief is. A second aspect to lament I'll share off the top is that it's critical in solidarity, in coming alongside, taking up the cause of others, human, other than human, joining others as they suffer, or joining the earth as it suffers, as they cry out to God, as they advocate for change. And as you join others, that takes as many forms as you can imagine. Sitting with, walks, meals, cards, shows of support. There's a few images up on the screen of images that come to my mind. On the bottom right, not too far from here, marching with missing murdered Indigenous women and girls, Two-Spirit last February. On the top left, there's some Mennonites in DC there calling for ceasefire. Hospital, bedside, hearing hard diagnoses or calling for things to change, advocating on behalf of another, which we know happens a lot. On the bottom left, vigils, where we keep watch, hold silence, light candles, remember victims of war.
When we were talking briefly about lament, one of the things that was interesting, I was kind of playing with lament and confession or guilt or penitence or, you know, that sort of, something around confession kind of was getting mixed in with lament. And you kind of were like, let's make sure we keep those separate. And I thought that's a really important thing, that when you're talking about lament is, if we're focusing on our misery or on like this suffering or sense of abandonment or injustice, it doesn't necessarily come along with confession. Like, they're two different things. You know, you can be angry and protesting something to God, and it's not because you've done something. So kind of keeping those, they're both are kind of like a prayer of sadness, but I feel like we need to make sure there's space for both of those. And to me then, that's a really powerful reason to lament, because you can have in the same room lamenting the people who have caused harm and the people who have received harm, which is a really strange practice and unusual practice. We can both enter into that lament together. Yeah. Okay, so at a personal level then, where did you learn to lament? And like, just talk about that. What's lament for you?
Yeah, that's great. What was the name of the person?
Kirsten. Yeah.
But prayer, similar to that, just low times, I don't feel like it, don't feel like praying. That's sort of where I'd enter into lament, kind of naturally. No one taught me how to cry. But some have given space and permission. And so for me, it's very much less, where did I learn how to lament, but where was I allowed to lament? You know, I think a lot of us will have those relationships with folks, or hopefully we have some of those folks that we have a relationship with, who just allow us to be, who unlock our grief, who give allowance for suffering, with their kindness and with their compassion. So a part of me wonders if we need less how to be taught how to lament, and more be allowed to do it, be given space, permission, validation. Some teachers for me, though, the Book of Psalms, been a really great teacher for me, as much as often as it's difficult for me to enter into the scriptures or to pray the Psalms, perhaps even as I once did, Kristen, Vicky. The Psalms have given me allowance to say anything. On the slides here, some of my favorites, out of the depths I cry to you, Lord. Hear my voice. Like, are you not listening? Psalm 10 as well, why do you hide? Like, where are you? Like, do you know what you're doing? Next, you know, all my longings lie open before you, Lord. My sign is not hidden from you. And this psalm starts with a little bit more of the complaint, and then it gets into, like, you already know, but that's really helpful to say, I think. And from Psalm 82, lament on behalf of others. How long will you judge unjustly and show partiality to the wicked? Calling on God, give justice to the weak and the orphan. Like, can you do something, please? Other good teachers, therapy, spiritual direction, settings, again, that have just given allowance, given space. Worshiping traditions that have a thorough engagement with suffering. Those who have taught me the importance of praying through suffering and lament as an appropriate response to injustice, like some Black church traditions, born out of slavery, Taizé, Palestinian Christians as of late, and learning that lament is an integral in the mixture of advocacy, truth-telling, justice, freedom. And we also just learn by doing. So I'm grateful to have a few folks around me who are also interested in drawing on our spiritual heritage, drawing on scriptures, engaging the body in community with meaningful rituals and simple ceremonies that respond to the crises that we face. And personally, like, my faith has really been held together by those who have faced horror, who have faced tragedy, and still look to Jesus for guidance. And I think I'll talk about some of those shortly.
Yeah. Are there any parts of lament that you find difficult? I think about, like, the difficulty of lamenting together. You know, like, I think weeping alone, yeah, I do a lot of that. doing it together, that's a bit more tricky. You know,
yeah, it takes a lot of energy, and it's sensitive. So yeah, it requires, especially when we lament or grieve with others, it requires a sensitivity. Or some of them are around sensitive matters, as you were saying. Yeah, maybe the victim is in the same room with the perpetrator. So it requires trust. It requires gracious environments and cultures. With Estuary Church, open, spontaneous prayers have perhaps been harmful to some in our circles. So it requires quite a bit of sensitive work to create spaces of honest sharing that is also safe enough. But it's not clean, it's not sexy, it's vulnerable. We often need to overcome feelings of embarrassment. Who's watching me? What will so-and-so think? And we do need to rebuild and reimagine songs, corporate prayers, liturgies. Here's one little interesting thing I thought of this morning. So it's a bit of a half-baked thought, but I hear you're okay with those.
We are totally okay with those.
So when
I preach them every Sunday.
So when we lament, it perhaps changes how we celebrate and mindful of how we celebrate and who's impacted by our celebrations and with some of our longstanding traditions. A couple quick examples. This Christmas, you know, a number of Palestinian Christians canceled Christmas. Bethlehem's under attack. Gaza's under attack. We've canceled Christmas. And so if we're in solidarity with folks, the birthplace of Jesus, what does that mean for our celebrations? That makes it in conflict. We need to change. If we're in solidarity with indigenous folks here on Turtle Island, well, that perhaps changes how we celebrate Canada Day or some of our other celebrations. So I think some you know, unmarked graves are found. Well, okay, I can't. How do I sing O Canada? Or what does that mean for some of these celebrations that maybe we've held for a bit? So it might change how we celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been reading a little bit of Sung Chan Ra on lament, and he writes that lament in the Bible is the liturgical response to the reality of suffering, and it engages God in the context of pain and trouble, so kind of along the lines of what we're saying. And then he talks about what the hope of lament is, like why we do it. So the hope of lament is that God would respond to human suffering when it's wholeheartedly communicated through lament, which is an interesting and tricky thing to think about. So I actually wanted to just think about it in terms of the specific vigils that you've been holding as a sort of example. These weekly vigils for peace, I'm wondering why you felt the need to lament weekly, and maybe we can go from there. What did you want from that? What did you hope for?
I could describe them really briefly. In short, we gather online. We did it a few times in person. But basically, like in community, we speak to God through prayers, songs, silence, candle lighting. We speak of the horrors in Gaza throughout the Levant. We lift up prayers from Palestinian Jewish voices. We share poetry, prayers of protest, asking, hoping for things to change. We remember. Part of us is remembering, just the witness of the scriptures, the testimony of the saints, that the love of God is bigger than the violence that much of this world is consumed in. And really, it's just hard to know what to do. Like, what do you do when crisis hits? You know, especially hard for some long-standing crises like systemic racism or climate catastrophes. Like, and we may know, and say, okay, we know communal prayer has been helpful. Maybe not, but you know, some of us know communal prayer has been a helpful healing tool. But we may not know like how to do it or with whom. Like, do I just like gather a few folks in my home, or like what do I do to engage with the wildfires or the murder of George Floyd, or you know, and some of it's just an impulse to do something and a need to recognize the need to process with some others. Process what we're witnessing and hearing. Barbara Holmes has been a really helpful resource and academic writer for us. She writes of just the necessity of contemplation or prayer in responding to crisis. She does it through, you know, through the lens of BIPOC peoples. And she asks, you know, up on the screen here, like, how do we survive together? How do we resist together? How do we respond to the unspeakable brutality and the collective oppression of our neighbors? Just think about it for a second. Like, how do we deal with reckon with the brutality of life? Some of our typical responses, you know, they could be numbing or distracting or death scrolling, that's my latest, you know, ignoring. We're really good at like arranging our lives and our schedules so we don't need to actually face the horrors and the suffering that exists in the world. And what Dr. Holmes says is, you know, that we have communal traumas, and to heal from our communal traumas, we need communal healing rituals. You know, she gives the example of the murder of George Floyd. Like, many of us likely saw the witness. You know, the public lynch, like that 8 minutes and 46 cents, 6 seconds. Many of us watched that. And so that is now a communal trauma that we need to do something with that. We need to sort that out somehow let alone if we're going to be part of, you know, untangling systemic racism, but even just to deal with some of those images and the brutality we face in some of the runoff off of that. And so Dr. Holmes calls for liturgies and practices that nurture each other and our lives together. She says, we survive as a people because we collectively nurture one another. We respond to need and trauma as a village. And this village does not require sameness or proximity to respond. Belonging matters. Our lives together matters.
So then the question is, you've been doing this weekly, and what has a weekly communal lament done? Like, you had a hope for it. Mm-hmm. How have you experienced it, and what has it done for you?
Yeah, I guess we had some hopes for it, but part of it just to gather folks, so no high hopes. It's just to keep us alive, on our toes, know that we're not alone. You know, the hope, part of the hope was to, you know, just engage our minds, our bodies, our hearts in loving our neighbors. And part of it is to sustain some of our advocacy efforts. A number of us are involved in different public actions or rallies, contacting MPs, organizing, peacemaking in different ways. So, you know, a lot of my advocacy efforts have been in fits and starts. They're not sustainable. And I get my hands in a lot of different things. And so part of the commitment to pray for ceasefire weekly is just keep us regularly on it. And the crises before us are just so daunting. I've been to a number of workshops with Ched Myers. He's a practical theologian. He often brings up the hockey stick curve graph, where so many aspects of human activity on this earth are just skyrocketing, like they're just peaking. Extinctions, population, loss of rainforests, water use, mental health challenges, substance abuse, like hockey stick curve, everything. It's overwhelming, there is so much. And so one of the tasks before us, I think, is a spiritual one. And it's the task to hope, to not despair, to look sober-mindedly at the evil in front of us, to not ignore it, not push it aside, but to look, maybe not everything, some things, to look properly, carefully, and to not despair. He says this, Ched Myers, what is unbelief but the despair dictated by the dominant powers that nothing can really change? And so part of the hope for the vigils is just to respond to crisis meaningfully, sustainably, and realizing that requires some spiritual fortitude. And so part of it is to develop an on-the-ground sort of spirituality, keep at it, to respond to the many crises that we face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder if, I think that our theology and theology of different church traditions really impacts our relationship to lament. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of things that could be said, but one thing that I think of when I come from my own tradition is that when we don't take seriously our bodies, the earth as it is, we have this sense of like, we're going to be escaping this place to go to heaven someday, and so this stuff doesn't matter as much. For me, that's one of the places where I've seen lament go to the side, right? Because you're like, there's not a lot of point in lamenting the sadness here, because it's going, I mean, it is sad, but let's focus on the hope. And actually there's, and we'll talk about this in a minute maybe, I was reading Kathleen Billman, and she was saying it's actually in the 60s, there was a real shift in liturgy, where people in the church were saying, let's move away from the guilt and the penitence and the confession, and let's move towards like the victory and the hope of Jesus. And that somehow in that shift, lament also got lost, even though lament is a part of the victory and the hope. The sort of trying to pull away from guilt and try to think about the future and the hope for the future, somehow lament got lost in that. Anyway, so there's lots of stuff, but where do we find lament in the Bible? Where do you see it in the Bible most meaningfully? And like, let's ground this in our theology, like, you know, where we find it in Scripture.
I don't think there's any, like, where is there not suffering in the Bible? This is a better question. Yeah, we are good at focusing on some of the, maybe the prettier things or some of the victory, otherworldly things. I'd like to draw us to the scripture reading for today, where, you know, it's post-Christmas Epiphany text. Jesus is born. The star is rising overhead. The wise men, they come bearing gifts. They stop to Herod's palace for guidance. Herod is enraged. There's news of another king on his land. And then he's outwitted by the Magi. He orders the slaughter of any male child around Jesus' age. The Holy Family flees to Egypt. The wise men, they're tipped off by the Spirit, and they go home by another route. It's right there. It's right there in our Christmas story. This is Christmas, right? This is Christmas. Our Christmas celebrations may not highlight this, but this is Christmas. The star is pretty, the gifts are shiny, the wise men, they're cunning, the baby's cute, but murder of innocents is horrible. It's horrible. Can't really think of anything worse. Which would you rather give our attention to this morning? It's just hard. So I'd like to just talk about Rachel really briefly. I think that'd be good for us. As Matthew brings it up, it says this in the scriptures, "Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping in great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." Matthew evokes Rachel, a grieving mother. And let me just give a really quick background on Rachel here. So in Genesis, we learn that Rachel, she dies, giving birth while on the road to Bethlehem. Then, a bit later, the prophet Jeremiah uses Rachel's lament from Genesis as an expression of grief over a multitude of children. And this time, because they're being led into captivity. It's a different context, but Rachel is still highlighted here. Then fast forward for the gospel writer Matthew. Rachel weeps again, this time over the slaughter of children at Bethlehem, after Jesus is born by the decree of Herod. And so Rachel is this like archetype for mothers, parents who are grieving, lamenting for their children. And so you see, like it's just part of our spiritual heritage, lament is. A couple things, theological things I'd just like to pull out for us. One, God hears. This is throughout the scriptures. God hears. Whatever you say, however you say it, what you don't say, God hears. God hears your cries, your desires, your groans. You know, I have no clear answer to give you to what God does with those. but I am drawn to the witness of scriptures and the saints that say, God is with us, God hears us. There's a psalm example up on the screen that highlights that for us. Secondly, I'm also drawn to the theological stream that understands Jesus as the suffering servant. The man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, as articulated by the prophet Isaiah here, again, up on the screen. He was despised, rejected by others. Man of suffering and acquainted with grief. So the fullness of God in Jesus is one who identifies themselves as Emmanuel, one who was with, one who suffers with. And this is the incarnation that we celebrated at Christmas. God walks among us. God suffers with us. God marches with us. God hears us.
I think we should move into a time of practicing lament. But before we do, I'll just add on a little bit on that piece anecdotally. I remember speaking to a woman on a retreat on Bowen. It's actually Tom Wiest's wife. I don't know if anybody knows Tom Wiest, who's written some of the songs that we sing here at Artisan. And I started crying about something and I apologized. I don't know if you have that too. Like whenever I cry in front of somebody, I start apologizing. And she said, stop apologizing. She said, tears are holy. And in the moment I was like, yes, they are. That's true. And then I thought, is that actually true? And when I thought, oh, this just feel good. And then, you know, like exploring that a bit, there's a couple of spaces where I actually know, I think this is true. Like if there's a heritage sort of in scripture around crying and crying being a holy activity. So the two that I always think of are Jeremiah 9:20, where the verse that says, teach your daughters to lament. Teach them how to cry. Like, this is going to be an important part of what you do going forward. Teach them how to do this. And then the other one in Judges, which is this horrible story of a father who ends up having to kill his daughter. And at the end of it, it says that this started a tradition where the women always would go outside and they would cry and lament every year on the same day. So this was a tradition going forward. And I kind of think of those two sort of traditions around crying and lament as like a bit of my own spiritual heritage, right? Like this is, teach someone how to cry, and then these things that happen, keep them in mind and keep remembering them and do that together. So just to add on those two pieces as well. Okay, we wanted to practice lament together. So you each have a piece of paper and you have a pencil, hopefully somewhere around you, unless your kids have taken them off to Sunday school. And Darren's gonna just give us a very simple activity of lament. And then you're gonna be invited to put these laments, if you would like them to be read out later in the prayers of the people, invite you to put them over here on this table during communion time for them to be read out loud by someone. You can also not put them there. You know, whatever you write on the paper is completely yours to do what you'd like with. But how do we use the paper?
Yeah, for sure. So for some of you, formulas just don't work. In your case, just, you know, just let it out, whatever. Write it down, honor the privacy of others, of course. Some of you just, you know, God hears you. What I want to just validate is your groans are prayers, your bursts of anger, prayers, your griefs that come like waves, prayers. For those of you who find a little rubric helpful, here are a few categories, and I'll highlight one for us. When it comes to lament, address. Who are you addressing? Who are you talking to? God of life, Great Spirit, O Christ, I don't know, whoever you are. Honest expression of truth, anger, sadness, confusion. I am, this is, whatever. Every dang day, whatever. Protest, what we want to change. Ask, implore, do something. Listen to our cries. Have mercy. Don't be far. And remember, you know, don't force this one, but, you know, may your kingdom come, may it be so, handing it over to God, a commitment, I will walk your path of peace, or remembering, yeah, generations, or maybe attaching, you know, your faith to someone else, like, oh yeah, so-and-so loves you, God, I will use their light and jump, attach myself to their faith, you know, so we will be moving to the table in a little bit, but before we do that, we'll give a little bit of this. Part of this is just space. Again, just giving permission, space, feel what you feel in community. Allow yourself to connect with some suffering within, suffering in this community, suffering around the world. The hard truth is that suffering is not far from us. Some of you may be feeling really great right now. Don't feel bad about that. You do you. This container here, it'll be about 5 minutes or so. Maybe I'll invite the band up now, actually, as I'll finish explaining this. So the band's ringing. So this container will be about 5 minutes. You're welcome to leave this space if that would be helpful for you, best for you. There will be some music in the background. As lament is an expression, so is art. And so the song, oh, just a quick word on the song they'll be playing, is called God of Peace and Justice. The melody is from Palestine and translated from Arabic into English by John Bell. I encourage you to engage your body somehow. So that could be through singing, humming, sighing, bending low, opening up, or writing. And so when you're writing down a part of lament, I'll encourage you to do the honest expression part, is what I'd encourage for us. If you take this whole gathering as a whole, we've done some address with a number of our songs and prayers. A little bit later, we'll come to the table And so we'll do some remembering and pulling it together a little bit. And so I'd encourage you to just focus on that part a little bit. And again, as Aaron said, you know, I'd say just focus on this, and then I'll explain again later what you can do with those sheets, but just sort of get into it that way. So just one really last thought before we jump into that. The belief here is that our suffering commingles with the suffering of God, that God hears, God is moved, and God suffers with. So as much as you can, dive into this time.
Thank you.
Thanks, friends. Thanks for engaging. We're now going to move to a time where we come to the table, to the bread of life and the cup of suffering. The gospel is the good news that God our Father, the Creator, out of his great love for us, has come to rescue us from sin and death and to renew all things through the work of Jesus Christ on our behalf. This is for God's great glory and for our profound joy. I'll invite us to say together, we acknowledge